one would want to do first, something very joyous, and that is we want to publicly congratulate the Honourable Tiako, Lerato Tiako, who's now the Honourable Kay, on her marriage, recent marriage. Thank you. The second issue, though, is a little bit more somber. No doubt all of you do keep up to date with the news and that kind of thing, but you may not have appreciated one of the significant positions that the late Honourable Minister Edna Molewa occupied. She was originally, well, not originally, she was the first woman chair of Trade and Industry in the first term. And I would like us to just observe a few seconds of silence. And some of you may be aware she was recently awarded the Legion d'honneur, apart from many other honorary recognitions from other countries. But let us look at the agenda. I was just talking to a couple of colleagues earlier and indicating that we do need some form of adjustment in the program of today. But some of you are already aware of what is there because you saw the earlier agenda. For the most part, it is the same. But you can see we hope to at least be briefed, I think, by Ms. Madalani, is that right, on the BRRR? Is that, you? Didn't you prepare this report, Ms. Madalani?
Chair, it's mainly Ms. Sheldon, but I'll assist in doing that.
Right. And then the DTI's response on submissions received on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, and then Advocate van der Merwe's input on that bill, followed by lunch, and we'll all help ourselves to lunch. DTI, you know, the committee's not providing it. We return then, and one of the many issues advertised was the offences, and that will be dealt with in detail, and the response of DTI on it, followed by Advocate van der Merwe's input, followed by tea, and then deliberations on the Copyright Amendment Bill. It is my intention to end on time, and that is 5 o'clock. All right. So Mr. Hermans will be returning with some of the changes within the program, given the extensive submissions we received. But can we please have someone at this point to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Montage, seconded by the Honourable. I can't keep on saying Ms. Honourable Kay, so I do need the full name for the register as well. You know, and I know you'll give it to me as soon as possible. If you could certainly make Mr. Medima aware of your formal name change. Right. We then move on to apologies. Mr. Medima, I think you deal with it, and then if there are any additions, the whip will also add.
Good morning, members and the department and members who are visiting. The following three members have apologized. Mr. Mashawo, Mr. McPherson, and
Mr.
Why they're not here. Okay. Mashawo is party business. Mr. McPherson will arrive a little late, and Mr. AJ Estay isn't party business.
Right.
Thank you.
And then we will hear the additions or comments from the... Are you happy with that, Honourable Whip? So we've had the apologies. We're running 20 minutes late. And Ms. Sheldon, I understand that you and the researcher, Ms. Madalani, were both sort of working together on this, but I believe you will take us through. Is that right, Ms. Sheldon, on the BRRR?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Is that right? Okay. So we're not deliberating. We are being taken through this page by page. All right? Verse, and then moving on and on and on. Please make your notes and try to avoid interrupting Miss Sheldon. I should, though, just thank those in attendance, and that is the DDG, Dr. Evelyn Masocha of CCRD, Miss Ntombi Matamela, acting, oh, this has got a huge sort of title, is a Group Chief Operating Officer, wow, BRRR, Miss Maria Ria Nonyane Mokabane, Chief Director, Miss Mashenri Padiachi, Deputy Director, CCRD Policy. Very important role that. Miss Pragora Mabusa Mavangu, Director Legal Drafting, CCRD. I just don't see her.
Chair, they will be in the meeting. I think they're running a bit late.
They may also be at the other house, in the other house. Is that it? I heard some people are there. Mr. Nkosinati Mkonza, CCRD Administrator, thank you. Mr. Lucky Pashla Moshlaka, I hope, Director of Finance. I hope that is right. Pashla Moshlaka, is it? Yeah. Advocate Johan Strydom. I know we're expecting him from time to time, but I understood he would be in a little bit later. Is that correct? In attendance for DAC, I don't know if members of DAC are here. I don't see anyone. And then in attendance for the Constitution and Legal Service Officers of Parliament, the Advocate van der Merwe, Senior Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Head of Legislative Drafting. We don't have Mr. Huang this morning with us, but he will be joining us on other days. Right, so we go straight into the BRRR. Yes, thank you very much, Ms. Honourable Plungwini.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair, and welcome back. Chair, can we just have that door open? It's
okay.
Very hot, and I'm 35. I'm really not menopausal yet. So please, can we just...
I do assure you, I see some of the men, and they're perspiring. All right. Well, at least we've got that little bit of air. All right. And I know the windows don't open. Is that right? No, Honourable Williams, we can't go down that route. We really can't. We really can't afford to. But I do know what you mean, and it's good that you've come back really perky. Okay. Ms. Sheldon, will you take us through that then? Thank you.
Good morning, members. So we've done the draft, the initial draft BRRR report. On page one, we're still going to do the introduction with the chairperson. 1.1 is our standard mandate, just the purpose of why we're doing this process in the first place. 1.2, the purpose of the BRRR, which is to look at the last financial year and the first 6 months. However, because of the timing of reports, we're only able to do the first quarter. 1.3 is the method, which is basically that we met with the AG to discuss their findings and the outcomes of the audit opinions, as well as with the DCI and with the NRCS in terms of the annual reports and the first quarter reports. Then 1.4, limitations of the report, that sort of sets out some of our constraints, and also just gives a brief overview of what some of the critical areas of the AG that the AG has pointed out as well. In 1.5 on page 3, we've got the outline of the contents of the report, which says what each section focuses on. On page 4, so part A focuses on the DTI and its non-financial performance for the 15 months. So firstly, we provide the strategic objectives of the department, and then list also what it oversees in terms of entities. On page 5, we've got a summary of our previous key financial and performance recommendations of the committee, which is our former BRRR recommendations and this year's budget report recommendations. Then on page 6, we've got the financial and non-financial performance of for the previous financial year. So I still will finalize all the spacing issues once the introduction's in. On page 7, we set up the non-financial performance. We've got a table of just capturing what are the key numbers in terms of performance indicators and the indicators that weren't met. 4.1.2 sets up the financial performance for the year, as well as on page 8, the expenditure by category. And then on page 9, the transfers to BTI entities. We also have audit outcomes on 4.1.3 on page 9. And then on page 10, there's a subsection that we still need to complete, 4.2.1, the non-financial performance for the first quarter. But then the financial performance is in for 4.2.2. And then the economic classification on page 11. We then set out in 4.3 the issues raised during the deliberations. I need to just put this out, Jay, or okay. So the key issues here were the economic impact of incentives on the economy, the status of mineral beneficiation, the DTI's role in terms of the technical recession and addressing that, the status of the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, and on page 14, the impact of the closure of the Tiger Brand facilities, which is the listeriosis crisis, and then South Africa's benefits in terms of the BRICS grouping. Then, okay. Okay. On page 15, we switch to the NRCS as part B. We've laid out what the main purpose of the NRCS is in the introduction. In 5.2, we discussed the performance for the previous financial year, so non-financial performance and then financial performance on page 16 and 17. And then on page 18, we set up the key human resources statistics. And on page 18 as well, the audit outcome of the NRCS. On page 19, 5.3, we set up the first quarter financials and non-financial performance. And that goes over to page 20. As well as the human resources for NRCS. At the bottom of page 20 is the key issues raised by the committee on the NRCS. We're still busy cleaning this up, but the main issues were in relation to the ICT modernization project, the audit action plans, employment issues were raised, and then the revenue collection is linked to the AG audit issues as well. And then there was an issue about legal metrology in terms of the housing ethos. Because I'm still cleaning it up, Chief. So I'll group it better and include the responses linked to the questions that the members raised. On page 22, it's just the outline for the concluding remarks and the recommendations. We've done the appreciation section, and we'll work on the conclusions and await the members' recommendations.
All right. What is also important then, from Mr. Medina's side, given the in line with the current program, the one that is before you, where were we expecting to finalise the deliberations? Just give us that date. Say, when was this expected? just so that members have an idea, look, you've got to come with conclusions, you've got to come with recommendations, and they can't come on the last day. So if you do get that currently where we are, just tell us.
Chair, the formal consideration was going to be on the 16th of October.
Now, as you can see, the 16th of October is effectively, if I'm not mistaken, next week. So if you think that, oh, well, what is this for, you really do need to be able to take this to your political structures and engage on it so that you can contribute to the conclusions at our next meeting. And I think that what I'd like to remind all members of is that in all of the commissions that are either taking place or have concluded in the last 24 and a half years, one thing has come out very, very clear, that Parliament may be, or the legislatures may be failing in holding entities, departments to account. And so to tell me in this committee that your particular political entity is unable to contribute to a conclusion or a recommendation, I think would be remiss, and that is my opinion. I think you need to be able to help us get back on track with fiscal good governance. I'm really appealing to members of the committee in this regard. So we need to go through some of this, and I think I'm just going to, I don't know how many of you read this, apparently you did get this a lot earlier. Who has managed to read it? Everyone? Looks like everyone read it. I know we've had it for more than a week, so I'm hoping most people did. With respect to the mandate of the committee, page one, I would like us to add in there the importance of the budget there, its oversight in terms of accountability, etc., and what an important process the BRRR is, because it enables us to ask for either more money if needed or less, or to be guided by the fiscal constraints. So let's try and put that in the mandate part. On page two, now you've got the purpose, the limitations. Under the limitations of the reports, you know, you see the point made here by Ms. Sheldon and Ms. Madalani at the last paragraph that they were considered for a 15-month period. Do you see that there? Given our constraints, etc., and reliance on the Auditor General's report. And something which we ought to note, that I think it is 10 years later, or perhaps it could be 8, I'm going to be guided by the department and also the WIP. It used to be CIPRO in 2009, I think. And 9 years later, we may wish to say, look, has there been some significant progress since the debacle of CIPRO and changing and transforming this into CIPC? You know, the some of the perhaps the progress there. Page three. What is a little bit of a concern here at the top of the page, you will see, due to the timing which the Sheldon referred to when she took us through this, the timing of the the report itself verified the second quarter only was not available. So that does pose a certain challenge. You're only looking at the first quarter. And I think that must be contained in the report as one of those limitations. And I don't think we'll be ready for it at the end of October because we have to go through with the report beforehand. Okay. The outline of the contents, that is the outline which you can conceive, it is the layout. Are there any inputs generally in terms of that layout? No. That something should have been captured, you believe, and isn't. I think that even though we only have one quarter here, it may be pertinent to note the, and I think you have got it somewhere in the budget, the actual percentage of the budget this uses. And is it using it effectively will be the comment we could make in the conclusion, you see. So incentives have got X, and we know for a fact every year we exhaust the incentives. What are we going to say? For how many years have we been exhausting the incentives? I think that information, as we come to the conclusion of this term, that becomes more important for the future, if we could look at that. All right? The other issue here on page 3, when you're looking at the non-financial performance, for example, and when you get to the NRCS, there's a reference to listeriosis before you actually focus on the NRCS. And it may be pertinent to note that at the time, if I'm correct, they had not been asked to carry out that inspection. What is our view on that, you know, and what has the department done? Because the department's been proactive there. I think that's an important issue that people are made aware of. Page 3, going on into page 4. As you move on to page 5 and you look at the recommendations, it says 3. Summary of previous key. How have we measured up now? If already we did this and we said you must establish a monitoring mechanism, how effective is it? That's what we asked for before. Is it doing its job? All right. Strengthening the oversight on the implementation of audit plans. We also ought to ask ourselves, have we done this effectively? In engaging with the Auditor General, did we exercise our oversight there effectively here on the department? And then the funding of SABs. You know, we asked for this to upgrade critical technical infrastructure, and the only thing that we are aware of is they've got a new fancy building. Now, I'm not sure within that building have they upgraded the machinery. Are you? I don't... Honourable Flangwin?
Honourable Williams?
Thanks, Chair. Mine is just maybe perhaps, I don't know, can we add or what can we do here? Because to just say... sorry, to upgrade critical aging technologies and infrastructure, was there not also a problem with auditors going out to or assessors? There was something like that also before, that they are having problems with assessors and stuff. So shouldn't we add that component as well so that we don't limit it only to infrastructure only?
I'm just wanting to get some clarification on the point you're making, because I believe it's related more to SANUS, but let me... No, everyone jumping in now, you know. But I think that who will speak to that, just to explain, because I believe that, but we need a bigger, better explanation than the word I believe or phrase. Just explain. Yes, and your name first, please.
The name is Nondombi Matomela, Chair. And yes, the issue that the Honourable Member is raising is relating to SANUS. And also, Chair, just a correction, it is not SABs who got a building, it was SANUS.
Additional funding.
SANUS moved into a new building.
Oh, all right. Well,
there we are. It is good to be corrected on the spot, as they say,
and not afterwards. Thank you so much. Yes. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to go back to 3.1 on page 5. It's the recommendations that we did last year. And I just want to know, do we ever get told whether or not these recommendations are accepted by the executive or are they implemented by the executive? Because it says here a monitoring mechanism in consultation with the Minister of Finance and other relevant ministers to ensure compliance with local designations. And fundamentally, one of the biggest problems we've got is this creating a local demand for local products. And if this is monitoring mechanism was not established and has not been doing this, then what, you know, what mechanism do we have as a committee to ensure that our recommendations are implemented, or if not implemented, then a reason for their non-implementation must come to us. And we haven't received this. So it's all right. Every year we put in recommendations about localization, but nothing, you know, where's the response to this? Thank you.
The quick one is that we have received a response. Let us go to the speaker, and then they're sent back to us. And in fact, DTI has been one of the departments that have been very effective in responding immediately on the issue. But what may be valuable for all of us, because, you know, we can't be expected to remember all this at the end of the year. Mr. Medima, get those responses for our meeting tomorrow. You know, email them through as one so that we've got them. Would that be helpful? All right. Honourable Mantash?
In agreeing with Honourable Williams, we have made these recommendations before, but on oversight we have seen that nothing is moving and none of what we recommend is being implemented, and our own legislation is flouted continuously by the department and its entities. Thank you.
Well, we may wish to, during this report, check where this is, anyone observing this, or is it exactly as you indicate? Honourable Whip, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the recommendations of the committee budget report for the committee to should consider 18-19, I think the issue of the program of the black industrialist must also get a high profile preference, but not only on the issue of the incentives of getting money, but in ensuring that they get a stake in the designated sectors. For example, we had that problem of locomotives. That program of locomotives would have done a lot for the black industrialists, you know, but what has happened is that thing was shunted. There were shortcuts. I think that one must be highlighted, that the black industrialist program must not only include the incentives, but there must be a report on the issue of the designations. How much work were they given? I think that one must be captured, because we cannot just pump money out year in, year out. Now, the issue is that they must get work, because there's no one, I think, that wants to be dependent on someone else forever. Thank you, Honourable.
Thank you, Honourable Whip. Honourable Williams.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a quick thing that is actually quite a new thing, and I apologise for bringing it now, but I think it's important. Recently, they've legalised cannabis in South Africa. The judiciary legalised cannabis to be used in the home, etc. But I've also heard reports about farms that grow cannabis in the Western Cape that have been sold to international companies already. So I want to know if the DTI is aware of this, and do we have some plan to make sure that we do not miss out on a transformed cannabis production, whatever, industry, because we missed out on the green economy, because that is owned and controlled by white people in South Africa, even though it was established under the democracy. So I just want to know whether or not we should add this into this, because the cannabis industry could be billions and billions of rands, and if we're not on top of that, it's going to become owned and controlled by a German company or whoever, because they'll be here. So I think that we should start looking at that as a way in which... Yeah, thank you.
Worth just keeping in mind and coming back to. Honourable Flanguini, followed by the Honourable Khadebe.
Chair, I think my hand was just, it was not necessary, but since you have noted me, let me just add to what Honourable Williams have said. I've also read that already there's going to be a cannabis conference be held in Johannesburg soon. So maybe we need to investigate those farms.
Sure, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, sometimes I'm wary of a situation whereby we put a cart before the horse. I think that what has happened, the court has made a judgment, but it does not mean that it is law. Because basically what the court said is that it is for private use, for private purposes. But there are certain things which we have to deal with. Let's say if I get a bonus, I'm making an assumption, I'm using this thing for private use, I get a bonus, I decide to buy a sack of cannabis for the whole year so that I buy next time. But once it is in a sack, it means now we are not trading with it. So there are a lot of things which are in there. But I think that we must get some sort of a report from the department. What is the approach on how to industrialize or beneficiate it? But we cannot put it on our recommendation now.
No, we'll just take it forward for clarification. Because my understanding is that it was simply decriminalised by the Constitutional Court. And it's the same as talking about smoking being decriminalised per se over the years. And yet there is legislation which says I may not smoke here, 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 as it were. So let us get a clarification on that, Mr. Medema. But what I'm hoping to do is to move rather rapidly through this. And someone mentioned BIP, the Black Industrial Program, and what I think we have been informed by DTI over the year is that it's not that the incentives aren't there, and we ourselves on a previous oversight visit learnt that. The reality is they are not getting the tenders. So it's one thing to get 10 incentives. What's the use of even one if you're not going to be getting the tender? And I think we should keep that in mind as we move through this report and maybe seek a clarification from DTI as to what it is they may be aware of in terms of the designations, the localization, and the Black Industrial Program, the relationships there, that they'd have these incentives and one tender, or whatever. And I think we need to broaden that out and flesh it out a little bit more, because the anecdotal evidence does not look positive. Honourable Tlangwini.
Thanks, Chair. I think we need to put in maybe perhaps a table format or something that you say, this is what we have given out to a company, and then that is the tenders that they were getting, or just maybe say for instance we have funded so many black industrial companies, and then so many tenders if the person has got with maybe perhaps in government or something like that, and then maybe even in private sector we have helped them to accumulate or get business and so forth. I think something like in that explanation. Thanks, Jim.
No, thank you very much. I think that's a very good idea. And I know the staff here, table staff, are listening as well as DTI. But let us move then. I also see that we're talking about a lot of monitoring, strengthening public-private partnerships and the rest. And as we get to go across the page to page 7, the non-financial performance.
Department had 25 performance targets. Of the 25, 22 were achieved. I think that's important. While 3 were not. Why not? Why not? I'm sure we're going to be told, are we further down? Hopefully, why not? This translates to 88% achievement of targets. And then we see that breakdown over here. Now, why have we not achieved all of these programs? The financial performance is there. Just a quick one to yourself, Ms. Sheldon. Do we address that issue further on? And in fact, do we agree we must address that issue? You've done very well. However, why were these? What were the impediments? What were the challenges here?
rate. 8. As we move down there, we look at the financial performance, etc. Expenditure by category and so on. The huge amount going to transfers and subsidies. You know, when we look at the transfers, it's one thing for us to say X percent of the budget of DTI goes to transfers. Where you are transferring it to, that entity or that company or whatever, is it actually implementing, utilizing those funds effectively? So we need to have this trail, you know, this line. Is everyone doing their job here? Otherwise it's useless to transfer funds, absolutely useless. Now we do get that expenditure, and someone was talking about, look at that, 7.9, payments to incentives, 72.4%. Very high. And if you look at that, you should be getting all of this BRP up and running. Why isn't it? And I think that is a challenge that we're facing. On page 9, I spoke about the transfers and the percentages, etc. They talk about the self-funded entities, but I think the NEF, as I sit here, Honourable Whip, Honourable Kadebri, and others who've been on the journey for some time, we've all been on that journey for the last 2 years anyway, we hear that NEF still asking to be recapitalized. Now, you know, I feel very embarrassed about this because 9 years ago, when we saw that we were going to close this lot down because they weren't doing anything with the little bit of money they had, and then there was somebody else was put in charge there, it was restructured, and within 2 years, it just had run. Couldn't look back. It was really performing so well, like incentives, they needed more money, etc. And I think it was from 4 years later, effectively for 5 years, they've come to us and they've asked to be recapitalized. I think it's 5 or 6 years. And at different points in time, some of you will remember, we were told they were going to get recapitalized, and they were going to get it through X or Y, and then IDC was the last one, as I recall. And that was 2 years ago. Now, what's happened? And I really think we ought to ask, what has delayed this? Can we do this? Yes?
Without taking the committee back. In one of our oversights, we in our entities, we discovered that the levels of the salaries of employees was far above the Public Service Commission's employees. And I'm looking at this one on page 8,
yeah.
And it's almost a billion. And I wanted us to check with them, what is it that they're doing? They say, why is it that they are paid more than the Public Service Act when government has said we must tighten up our belts? Because we can't be taking the money that is supposed to go for service delivery.
You are referring to page 8 in the middle where it says goes to transfers and subsidies. Is that it? While 1.6, that 17.4 remains for the DTI's operations. Is that it?
No, Chairperson. Compensation of salaries, table 4.
Expenditure right.
by category.
10.2%. That one.
Yes, Chairperson.
All right.
It's almost a billion rand. Yet we have, since 2015, been saying we must tighten belts.
Right.
Who is to tighten best? Is it the public services or the entities who are something else above the public servant? What does this mean? And I'm looking at what a rating agency should be saying. And saying, for me, this notion of saying, no, these are market-related salaries is not assisting government because we don't have money to do service delivery, which is what the ANC is charged on when we're going to every election. They say we're taking care of ourselves, not the communities. Thank you.
You know, the one challenge that we face in departments at the moment, throughout the national structure, and I'm sure the provincial structure as well, I say I'm sure, I don't know for certain, is that if you've got a category there that has been agreed to 5 years ago during the negotiations of the public service, blah, 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 you have to stick to it. And you go up accordingly. And we are tied to that ladder system, one. The second thing, of course, to remember is there are perhaps too many departments, perhaps too many ministries. I say use the word perhaps in the light of what has been said. And this also exacerbates the issue. But if we were to suddenly cut back on compensation, someone's earning X, and we say, no, it's now going to be 20% less, we know that's illegal. That's our problem. We can't. So it is a challenge that we face as government, that we are so bloated that the costs of compensation are very high. And I think you could consider that, take it to the political structure, as it were, discuss it, and you may want to put something in the conclusion. Can we leave it there for the moment, Honourable Mantashe?
Only Chairperson, if you are going to have a space to discuss it. I'm not saying we must cut their salaries, but at some point we must have a platform where we're saying these categories will not increase their salaries going forward, so that we can close the gap of those that come underneath, and we have a ceiling. Because, Chairperson, it is unfair.
I hear you now. I think that
proposal that you are putting forward on the table is something we could all consider. You know, closing the gap. No one's objecting to that, huh? Honourable Buyani?
Yeah, maybe couple to that, Chairperson, the challenge of NRC, given the fact if you can see that 15, 16, 16, 17, 17, 18, the allocation, the page 9.
Page 9?
Yeah, in terms
nine.
Of the transfer, yes. You can see that even in terms of the accountability and the other things are not forthcoming. So we must also get a clarity as to why the incentive and the transfer is so big and those computer systems still not happening. I don't know. But we must get a clarity on that one also.
We may find the clarity comes out a little bit later in the report. Let us just check that one. Keep it in mind. Honourable Khadebe.
The person, going back to what you raised on the issue of recapitalization,
yes,
of structures like the NEF. Remember that the NEF is a structure which actually provides something like development finance,
yeah,
which is providing at a preferential rate, not the normal rate which is happening. But I think that with this issue of the job losses which you are having, and the issue of the high unemployment rate, I think that structures like the NEF must be empowered or get more money so that they can be able to disperse, so that, because we know very well that it is not the government which is always going to provide work, but it is the individual enterprises which are small, which are expected to do more. Go to Germany. It is the SMMEs which are providing more work than government or big firms. So I think that the issue of recapitalization of structures like the NEF is very important. I think that we must reflect upon it, so that even if we speak about that package, the stimulus package, which the president raised some time back, I think that it's high time that we can put a joiner in, that part of that package must go to the empowerment or recapitalization of such structures, so that they are able to lend
and then be able to make people to create their own jobs at their own pace. I think that's something which we must really focus on it, Chairperson, because there is extra funding which is there, which I think that we must try one way or the other to, because if you are going to go through the budgetary process, it will never happen. As you said, that more than 4 years ago, this thing was raised. It was not done. But right now, there's hard cash somewhere. The DGI must go and make a pick as quickly as possible. Thank you.
I think we all take the point there. This is development finance. Let's use. And may I say, this is the only program other than the Black Industrialist Program, which is a recent program. It is the only entity that is dedicated to funding black South Africans. We may forget that. All the other programs I could even go and apply to when I finally retire, start a business. No, but I'm just saying, I think we need to keep that in mind. All right. The incentives have come up, and yes, Honourable Tlangwini.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's mentioned here on top, because there were three that doesn't have figures in, so I did see. And then on the national on MISA Chair. I'm just thinking, and we're not going to put in something about them, because last time they did come and complain, I think, about their offices that are dilapidated. I'm not so sure. So I think we need to also maybe make mention about that in the report as well.
We did raise this issue last year in the BRRR. I'm looking at members of DTI, it was raised there about NAMESA. And so I think it's going to be very constructive when we get the responses back tomorrow about what the department has done and achieved. Yes, Honourable Tlangwini?
Because I can see here it went down, the budget went down, so it's good if we can get those responses, because here, 2016-17, it was 264193, and now 2017-18, it went to 252. So it's going to be good if we can get those responses as well.
And let us never forget, NAMESA is directly related to the health of the population, huh? You do all recall what happened in the Eastern Cape about 23 years ago, when these measures, these weights were not quite exact, and then those injection needles which are calibrated, that had all come off, they were so old, you know what it's like, and what happened, the poor baby seemed to have got an overdose. So no one's fault in particular, but it tells you the critical nature of the work that NAMESA is doing. Thank you. Thanks to everyone there. We're going to be having to finish off round about page 16 or so and come back to this. Page 11, you see that there, expenditure there. And we did raise the incentives. Do you remember? Yes, Honourable Tierka? Well, I see I'm still saying that because I haven't gotten younger.
It's good. That was page 10, we also acknowledge the financial reporting from the AG, where we are noting audit report, which is a clean audit.
Yes.
But however, there's that loss which is recorded there, the irrecoverable receivables amounting to 32.5 million. I think I will also request that the department come with an explanation on when is this amount dated back to, or is it the loss of that last financial year, or when is this loss came about. Thanks, Chair.
Yes, I overlooked that. Thank you very much for drawing our attention to it as a committee. That's on page 10, or my page 10 anyway. Do we see that at the top of the page? Yeah. And I'm sure DTI has... sorry, did someone want to come in there from DTI? I see some sort of discussion, right?
Okay. Yeah, maybe to give clarity on this 32.5, it's for the old data from guys incentive scheme, from the old incentive scheme. It's not the current data.
Yes, we know that, but it's never been written off. So it's still there, large as life, you see. So it's good to know that it was a much older one.
So we can
perhaps we could ask for a written clarification. Harvest was incurred and why?
Okay.
I think let's leave it to that. Yes, Honourable.
And how it will be avoided in the future?
Yes.
Yeah, how it will be avoided in the future? Because 32 million is a lot of money.
Yes.
Okay.
And also, Chair, did any consequences for...
Comrade Manta, you see, sorry, Honourable Manta. Tash, if you just burst in there, you haven't even got your mic on.
Sorry, Chair, maybe I'm still in recess. I was just saying, Chair, and if they could tell us if there's been consequences on the on those officials who have been the cause of the loss to the department. Because we can't let government money go like that and we say we will it's irrecoverable. We won't go back and look into it. It must have consequences for us to stop it reoccurring it again.
Though it may not be the official per se, but the person who received the incentive. But we don't know, that's the point. And we must get a clarification on that. I'm looking at page 11 now, and at the bottom of the page, we made this reference to incentives. Do you remember? And the challenges thereof, and its relationship to the economy, in particular BRPs, etc., and broad-based black economic empowerment in general. So on page 12, just as we move down there, you'll see the status of mineral beneficiation in South Africa. Now, this is a good opportunity for me to remind members we have to close off reports at the end of each term. All right. Now, you will recall that we were dealing with designations, localization, and minerals beneficiation and transfer pricing as part of the value chain, adding value to the work we do to create jobs and to grow the broad-based black economy, specifically black industrialists. We must close this off, and you will know that we're going to just deal with that for about 3 months. Bills overtook us. But we can't just say bills overtook us, that's it. We have to close off. So I have asked Mr. Medima and Mr. Hermans, can they find the space in our program this year where we can spend a morning and maybe a couple of hours in the afternoon just bringing in the different people who were associated with this, so that what we can say in this report as part of our conclusions, that we have not completed that exercise and we will be returning to it to just have a preliminary report to close off this term. Do we agree on that in principle? So at least it takes us to a certain point. Huh? Right. Honourable Tika, and then followed by Honourable Langanani.
Thanks.
I was thinking of a very good executive person I had, who's now, I think, running the Gauteng legislature. And he's my name was on my mind.
Thanks, Chair. You'll get used to our name, don't stress, Chair. I think this the point that we're making, Chair, is a good one, and to say also we need to take into consideration the recommendations and the resolution of the job summit that took place recently. To also take it to factor those recommendations in our deliberation on that meeting. And to say it's work on progress, but however, we need to make sure that we align all stakeholders in this regard. Chair, thanks.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Flanguini.
Thanks, Chair. Now, because it's you, I will forgive you. Chair, I think I was still, I don't have any objection to your proposal and that you have put on the table, but I think I was still maybe perhaps on page 10, and I didn't want to interrupt you while you were speaking. Mine is just still on 4.2.2, that under spending total, Chair, if we can just get an explanation for that as well. Though we know that maybe perhaps underspending is not due to corruption or anything, but one just need to be alert also of it, and the overspending as well, so that those patterns don't turn over into unwanted activities. If we can just get an explanation there of as well. Thanks, Chair.
I think that's very valid. We can't just use this to put figures in. Whatever we put in, we must explain why. Why? Right. Honourable Hadebe?
Chairperson, I'm on the issue of the proposal which you made, on the issue of the closure of a report around this beneficiation. But I think that if you are going to recall any people to come in, I think that they must be guided. I think one thing which is very costly to industrialization is the high cost of energy. When you speak about bauxite, conversion of bauxite into aluminium, it's a lot of energy which is needed there. So the issue now, they must come straight and tell us what is the impact of electricity as the way NERSA is awarding the ESCOM in rolling out forward. What impact is it going to have? Because we might be saying that the left-hand side want to industrialize, but the right-hand side increases the cost in such a way that it undermines the very same industrialization we're speaking about. I think that we must make them to be focused when we are going to call them in. Because really, I think that some people are running amok. Actually, they're undermining the whole policy framework which we have adopted. Thank you.
There's something else which I think staff could address, perhaps not before the meeting tomorrow, but certainly this week. Over the years, even the 5 years we've been here, there have been references to administrative pricing, etc. Now, you know, the problem with Parliament is that reports are filed and forgotten. We need to be able to bring things together and say, right, now this is our final B triple R, and now we're back to square one, maybe here, or no, we've made progress here. Do you see? So that whoever comes in, they know, oh my gosh, they've been dealing with this 10 years, whoa, you know, what's going on? So I am going to ask for those different issues relating to precisely energy on the one hand. Remember, we did that as well, and Sheldon will recall that. I think you were deep in the midst of that, knee-deep. Anyway, members, just to give you some guidance, I'm going to be stopping here on the status of mineral beneficiation in South Africa, and then indicating that we will start tomorrow on page 13, the role of DTI, etc. But what I can ask the committee to take into account, and I raised this in the opening, was the listeriosis. And the immediate thing that people will say is, why didn't NRCS do something? Do you follow? And people need to know why and the relationship and what has happened since. This was a major issue in our country. In fact, it led to the closure of a couple of places. So we must actually go into that and say, lessons learned, where are we going? Can we have that factored in? If not by tomorrow, at least know that we have to do it. All right. So we are, Honourable Tierko, is it on that point? Yes, Honourable.
Thanks, Chair. I can see it's listeriosis, but we have observed now that even the spazas, there are, you find a tin with a fish, with a beans and what, and expired and what. So we need to be consistent, and we need to make sure that what we do, it's aligned, everybody is treated the same. So when we apply the law, we apply to everybody. this thing of saying we've got listeriosis and we don't know what is happening with those local spazas which are selling to our own people fake food, and we're not on that space and addresses that issue, Chair. So I had to add on that one.
The point you're making is very valuable, and I know some of our shops in the, can I say, informal settlements maybe, and so I'm quite shocked at what they're selling. And, you know, it's putting at risk the children and even adults there. We're all responsible here, particularly this committee. We don't realize how we hold the health and well-being of our nation. We think of it as economy, but actually it's the health as well. I want to thank you, Honourable Tierpo, Honourable Flangwini coming in there, and of course, Honourable Tash Williams and our whip. So are we able to do that, Mr. Sheldon, you know, if we can, as far as possible? I'm going to ask that we put this away at the moment, all right? And then let's move now. They've probably been champing at the bit here, and that is the DTI's responses on the submission received on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. And you know, while I'm just there and while they're getting themselves into gear, I have no doubt that some of you saw this. And it's to do with our copyright and everything going on. Some of you told me that you'd seen this in the City of print or something, and others saw it in the Sunday Times, you know, things like this, about the whitewashing of photographs and this, that, and the next thing, and other issues, even songs being taken over. And often we criticize the press for not picking up on issues, but the press has been very, very good in identifying some of the challenges South Africa is facing. And I would ask all of us to go and buy those papers, or at least read them, that you decided you weren't going to look at any longer. Get them again, have another look at them. No, no, because maybe they're also having a bit of radical transformation. Huh? So just keep that in mind and go through it. It's how someone just took over someone's photograph, whitewashed it, and claimed it for their own. You know, now I didn't pick this up. I'm sure no one here did. Oh, you did, Honourable Kichali, oh well. Did you, Honourable Khadebe, as well?
No, Chairperson, it's not only the issue of whitewashing the photographs. It's the issue of the royalties.
Okay.
It was said immediately after Aretha Franklin passed on. I think our own collective society owes the estate of Aretha Franklin more than 8 million rand. They were not paid. The one I made example of, Ubaba Mbodlomane, Umahlathini, also his estate is owed a lot of money. So it means that this thing which we are doing here is relevant, and then the quicker we fix it up, the better for the people and the image of the country outside.
Thank you, Honourable Khadebe. And you said, Honourable Kachalia, you had come across this. Yeah, and they are very relevant, aren't they? Thank you. At least we're at one on that issue. I do need to just raise one point. The committee due to start at 9:30. I did get the late apology from Honourable MacPherson, but we've gone past a kind of shelf life issue, you know. We're looking at close to 11. I'm not sure if you can assist us there, Honourable Kachalia.
He contacted me to say that he would be coming in as soon as he was released from the visa application queue that he was in urgently.
So in a way, we're not too sure. I think when it gets to 12, we will ask, in fact, even at 11:30, if you would just SMS him or ask Yvonne. I don't know if Yvonne's around. Yes, to communicate, just so that we get, he may be 3 hours away from getting it, we don't know, right. Okay, DTI, we've got Dr. Masocha here. Can I please ask members to allow the presentation to be made? and to note their need for clarification and comment. Can we do that, please? Yeah. Okay. What is it? I think, yeah, you know, you may need to get a long pole or something.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Honourable Members.
Yes.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to present on the responses to the submissions. We have received submissions from the public and stakeholders on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. And the purpose of this presentation is just to take you through some of the issues raised and our responses. The department received submissions. There were more than 20 submissions, but I think less than 30. So we received them. They were quite extensive, and they were followed by the public hearings that took place in September, mid-September, I think between the 13th and the 14th. And I'm just going to just give an overview of most of the things that were raised. So our approach is that we have a detailed document that outlines most of the issues discussed, and it's a 90-page document. There's a Word document, Chair. It's quite extensive. It looks at the process and the different stakeholders in more details. And the presentation itself is a snapshot. We just took certain elements that were more common around the different submissions, but also aligning that to the bill itself, so that there's an order in terms of how we are responding and the flow from the bill. And we are starting with the definitions. And in the definitions, there were broadly issues raised around the alignment between the Copyright Amendment Bill, the Intellectual Property Amendment Act that was finalized and is from 2013, and the bill itself. So most of the issues in the first slide, on slide 5, they talk to the definitional issues that were raised. For instance, there was an issue around the definition of broadcast. One of the stakeholders, it was from MNET and the SIIPL, they were saying that the definition of broadcast should be aligned in both the Copyright Amendment Bill and the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. And another input on the definitions was around the definition of the fair and equitable remuneration, because in the bill we talk about fair and equitable remuneration as informed by the treaties. And also that maybe we need to define what a producer of a phonograph is, for instance. So I'm moving through them like this just to indicate that these were definitional issues. And broadly we are saying that, for instance, the one about the broadcast, maybe the stakeholders meant to talk about broadcasting, because there is no broadcast in both of the bills. And also that we will ensure the alignment between the IPLA, with the Amendment Act that was passed on Indigenous Knowledge, with the Copyright Amendment Bill and with this bill. So that alignment will be addressed. Yes, we've noted that. And then we are also saying that the definition of fair and equitable remuneration is provided for from the WPPT, which is the WIPO Performances and Phonograms Treaty, and the Beijing Treaties. So they come from the treaties. This definition comes from the treaties. And that we are also saying that the contractual arrangements will guide how the remuneration is applied in general. And as far as the definition of the producer of phonograms is concerned, we could consider that because it is also defined in the treaties. Uh-huh. And the second slide, which is slide 6, is a continuation on the definition. One of the definition is around the definition of performance. The bill does not define what performance is, and also the definition of performer. The comment from IPO was that it is not clear and it's too broad, and they were not sure whether it also includes the crew members and also who receives the economic rights. And then there were other comments around the fixation issue, whether it's a fixation of a phonogram or the audiovisual fixations. So we've noted these broad definitional issues, and we are saying that, as I indicated, the alignment between the IPLA and the other bills, we are saying that the definition of performance will be taken into account. It is defined, and also it will be taken into account through the transitional provisions. And the members of the crew are not included when it comes to performers. So the concern there is that the definition of a performer, does it include crew members? So we are saying that the definition does not include crew members or extras. So it's one of the issues that was raised even in the public hearing, to say the definition is so broad, they don't know whether everyone who's in the set should be getting some remuneration or royalties. So we are saying that extras and crew members are not included in that category. And as far as fixation is concerned, we acknowledge that in IPLA there is that definition. It covers that. And it covers that for both the audiovisuals and the phonograms. And then we went to look at broadly the rights of the performers. And some of the comments that were received was included, actors should be viewed as independent, and that South Africa is not a contracting party to the Beijing Treaty and has not signed or ratified it. And they are saying that the bill is premature in that sense. And I must say, the issue around the treaties and ratification came out quite frequently in the submissions. There's a concern that most of the bill is informed by the treaties and we have not ratified as South Africa. And also that actors are treated as contractors and not as employees. And if members can recall from the public hearings, there was a lot of labor-related issues that came out regarding how actors are treated, whether they are employees or whether they are contractors, and the unfair labor practices issues. And then there was a concern that the bill does not encourage collective bargaining. And the contract by the broadcasters were raised as a serious concern by performers. If you recall, Ms. Florence Masebe and Ms. Nambi Tambumluana were here, and they gave their own testimonies of their experiences as performers. And in terms of our response as a department, we are saying that the issue around whether the performer is an independent contractor, the view on how actors should be treated, it varies. There are those who view actors as employees and others who view them as independent contractors. And also we are taking cognizance of the fact that our legislation may not be the appropriate legislation to pronounce on the status of the actors in terms of the labor-related matters. And in terms of the issue of the ratification of the treaties, we are acknowledging that we have not ratified, but there is nothing stopping the country from adopting the principles of those treaties for the domestic law to protect our performers. So we are not acting out of the Parliament will not be acting out of its powers to proceed with the bill, even though the processes of ratification have not been finalized. So the principles can be adopted, the law can be passed, and it's something that is it's doable, and it has been confirmed with other experts. Even WIPO supported this principle, to say that we can protect our performers, we can ensure that our legislation addresses the different rights we want them to have outside the process of the ratification. And in terms of the labor issues impacting on actors, we are saying that they are very important, and we think that we need more extensive engagement on this, and that the engagement may also require that the Department of Labor be brought on board to assist us with mechanisms on how to use their legislation to empower our performers. And we also say on the contract issues that there were concerns about us as the bill being too prescriptive and in terms of violating contractual freedom. And we are saying that the intention is not to develop contracts for the market or the industry, yep. but to come up with minimum contract requirements that will be prescribed by the minister, but taking into account the different dynamics of the different groups in the performances sector, for example, the broadcasting and the musicians and so on, because they might differ here and there. And as a follow-up on the other issues around labor, we thought that we should just maybe emphasize them more on the next slide, which is slide 8, because of just to support also the discussions that took place within the in the public hearings concerning this work. So the actor, Thato Mulamu, raised concerns around the independent contractor and the implications thereof as opposed to being an employee, which attracts protection in terms of other legislation, and that no legislation governs what the performer is, which leads to the exploitation. So there were mixed views. There are performers who want to be treated as employees, and then there are those who say they should just be remunerated fairly for their performances. And there were also, Sikelo Lasishuba raised the view that there should be a standardized pay rate, a rate card for the industry, as there is no union, and that the current SABC freelance contract stipulates that the broadcasters will pay royalties to the artists, but they have thus far not honored that agreement. So there is a general sentiment that SABC has not paid performers, generally from the performers themselves. They wrote, even though some of them meant they took a similar document and just wrote their names, we found some submissions where it's more like saying, me too, we are sharing the same view. Yeah. So, I must add here that I appreciate the fact that we got to hear from the performers themselves, because we are in a very difficult space where we want to create the balance between the investors that come from the broadcasting sector and then the interest of the performers, which means that balance must be striked between ensuring that there is that protection, but at the same time we mobilize the economy. So, but I think that appreciation is there, that they were able to come and echo and indicate their direct concerns. And there's also a view that came from Zikona Sotlaka, who said that the SABC should be required to sign this contract so that the artist may be able to enforce this clause. And I remember in the public hearings, there was an artist who said that there's a contract, but it's only signed by the performer. The SABC does not sign. So, which talks to the importance of the minimum requirements concerning a particular contract that a performer should be able to work with. And there was a view that the issue of remuneration should not be an issue. And Zikona was saying that when a show I have shot is being rebroadcast for commercial gain, the artist should get paid at a negotiated rate. This should be compulsory. No broadcaster should get away with non-compliance in this regard. So this slide is not meant to criticize broadcasters, but it's just to bring the voice of the performers that do not normally get a chance to be able to represent themselves. And we are saying as the DTI, this is just a view as part of the research as well, that generally actors would be considered to be employees. The company that hires them exercises a great deal of control over what they do, meaning the company or director tells them when to start, when to stop, what to say, and what to do. And in the same breath, independent contractors typically are independent. They set their own schedule, choose where to work, and control what they do. And if I recall what Ms. Nambita was saying, she was talking to how they are employees. She was talking about the Labor Relations Act and how they fit within that legislation. And also, if one were to look at the option of the union, because they talk about collective bargaining, the union element. certain rights must be made clear in the contract, even as independent contractors, meaning that even as independent contractors, there are certain rights that must be clarified and be made clear. And as I've already said, the labor issues, they should be addressed, but then we need to look at how to work with the Department of Labor or the labor-related issues, and as well as the minimum contract requirements we prescribed. And we really think that the remuneration of performers should be addressed. So meaning that as one of the core debates and deliberations, this issue must be at the center of the discussions. Because that's the crux of it. This is one of the biggest industries making millions and billions of monies. And it becomes concerning when the people who are making this industry do not seem to benefit from it. Then clause two, there were issues that were raised around the moral rights, and the moral rights talk to the image and the person of a performer, the protection of the integrity and the rights of the performer to own their own personal performance and not to be mutilated or distorted, but to represent them as they are. And there were concerns around the duration of moral rights, to say how long does moral rights last. There were questions around there's a need for clarity in terms of how long is moral rights, the duration and so on. And there were other concerns about the alignment of this, how we have drafted the clauses on moral rights and what is in the treaty, in the Beijing Treaty itself. And it was not just one, I think there were some few comments around this. And we are saying that the moral rights duration applies for 50 years. And as far as we looked at the treaty, we have not seen the departure from it. So we don't have clarity in terms of where we have moved away from what the treaty provides, because we took the rights as they have been provided by the Beijing Treaty. And that the bill is introducing this right in line with the Beijing Treaty itself. Mm-hmm. And also, there were also some issues around, there was a suggestion in terms of the wording to say that it is not clear why a performer would, in terms of subsection 3.2, only enjoy the right to be identified as a performer and the right to object to distortions and mutilations and so on of his performance only after
slide 10
only after the transfer of those rights as stated in subsection 2. And the here is a recommendation that the wording in the proposed subsection 3 to be corrected by replacing the word after with notwithstanding. And we are saying that we will consider that suggestion. And also to reiterate that this wording came exactly from the treaty, and as I've indicated what the moral rights intention is, but we could look at replacing the word after with notwithstanding. I think it's a constructive input. And in addition, now we move to slide 11. In slide 11, we look at transfer of rights, that is clause 3, 3A and 3B. There were questions around assignments. The question was raised in terms of if there are assignments of why be forced to pay royalties, why is it necessary to pay continued royalties when the rights have been assigned? And also there were questions around the 25 years, to say why be forced to pay royalties for 25 years. In terms of the section 3A and 3B, which may impact negatively, they are saying that these sections are not practical. If the law is not changed, SABC will be required to pay for everything. So here there were concerns about the way that the bill is drafted around the 25 years and the fact that it will lead to them paying and it might affect investment of companies. And also that if record companies told no right after, if they don't have rights after 25 years, why would they spend money on something they would not have anything on? So there were concerns around this, to say, if we say the rights will revert back to the performer, what about the investors? And why would they want to invest anyway, if that is the case? And this discussion around reversion assignment, we had extensive debates around this in the Copyright Amendment Bill, so it's not a new discussion. But we are saying as a department that the policy position taken is that even though rights are transferred, the performer should be remunerated. And it's not unique to South Africa. In other countries, they've also taken a similar position around the assignment and still paying the continual paying of royalties to performers. And also that the payment of royalties for 25 years is because the performance continues to attract royalties. So after that CD or after that DVD or that film has been produced, it continues to attract in money, remuneration. So we are saying that for that continued use of that work, then the performer should be rewarded. And there has been past injustices, we are acknowledging that, and broadcasters were not required to pay. So this will close the gap in the developmental gap of the South African economy and address the rights of actors. So we think that this is very important. It may not be the easiest because it will be the first time we introduce something like this, but we think that it should be something that is considered for their rights. And so this is a continuation of the same issues around the transfer. And say, for example, protection of sound recording and of producers, unless duplications may create confusion and may be misplaced. And they're suggesting that this be removed. And we are saying that this protection is for performers and that the remuneration of actors is key and that minimum contract requirements will be prescribed. And we are also reiterating that reversionary clauses are not unique to South Africa and that also the music industry can also benefit from these requirements for the performers. And we are also saying that for the question of what happens after 25 years, we are saying after 25 years, there can be renegotiation. They can renegotiate the terms of the contract. So there can still be a balance. There can still be a benefit to the investor and the performer. It doesn't mean that then the right is given to the performer and then the investor is left out of the picture. So the contract rules will still apply. And we are saying that the protection of producers are also important. So we don't think that we should remove the issues concerning producers in the bill. As much as it's a performance protection bill, we think that both are important, although the performance protection is also important. So there is a need for that balance. And I think I'll skip slide 13. It's along the same lines around the transfer. The transferring of the rights. So if members have questions around that, they can indicate. But it's just to indicate that these are some of the other issues that were raised around the transfer of rights. And I'll move to also skip slide 14 because it's similar, more or less, but different context. But our responses are more or less the same. It's about the performance. I mean the remuneration and the contractual requirements. So I'll skip to slide 15. In slide 15, clause 4, they are saying that not sure if prescribed written agreement is the way to go for well-known artists and unknown performers. So they are concerned around the prescription of an agreement and that there is a clause where we are saying that there should be a notification before something is done. And then the comment from Sambra and Sambra is that notify before nothing is done. So it talks about transactional licensing nightmare. They're saying that process, administratively, it might be a nightmare to be doing those notifications in terms of the licenses. And also, Sambra raised a view that equal sharing of royalties, we should look at the option of the equal sharing of royalties. It is something that it can be guaranteed and that the law must make it explicitly clear in terms of needle time that it should be 50-50. So here they are just making a suggestion that we need to look at that option.
and we are saying that the proposal of a 50-50 split can be proposed and considered, something that can be and then we move to slide 16. And MNET and MultiChoice raised a view that they support in principle measures to protect performers from abuse. However, the bill's approach in the proposed section 51A to 51D of the Act in particular, it interferes with the party's freedom to contract. And yeah, so most of this input is around the process that is outlined in the bill and the contractual arrangements. And we are saying that we will look at the minimum contract requirements, but then also the process that they are concerned about, which is things to be long and requiring certain permissions before. We are recommending that we look at that process and that it be reviewed. If it has got those challenges. So there were several inputs around the process in section 5. So we think that it's worth going back to look at that. And also, as we continue with, on slide 17 is the same point around the long process. And we can move to slide 18. So I'll move to the bullet number, the last bullet, which talks to the issues around the technology protection measures. There were concerns that we need to ensure that we insert that into the bill itself. And we are saying that as far as that is concerned, those sections, the numbering issues will be addressed, but also in terms of the TPMs, we will ensure that they are. We will look at the possibility of incorporating them into the bill. So we can move to slide 19. This talks to the issue of the TPMs, and then there was a concern around the punitive measures, that in South Africa we do not have punitive measures, and we are saying that there are civil remedies to address contraventions. And we do have punitive measures. But then with this process, we have also recognized that because the legislation is quite old, there might be need, we may need to review our penalties and offenses also for the Performance Protection Bill. So we are looking at that, and we are also saying that these are some of the things that we proposed can be addressed. And I think I've said some things about the TPMs. There were concerns. I'm now on slide 20, Chair. There were concerns that around the definition of TPMs, and there were concerns that maybe we need to incorporate TPMs in the bill, because we can't rely on what is in the Copyright Amendment Bill. And we are saying as a department that we could consider that the TPMs in the bill. And so I'm not reading everything, I'm just just highlighting things. And on slide 21, to conclude, we are recognizing that there are other legal technical issues in the bill that will be addressed. One of them is that the IP tribunal should be the copyright tribunal. There are others as well, for example, reference to the communications to the public of a phonogram to be removed as an example. So I think advocate will probably talk to more of these, but then there are areas in the bill that we've identified that needs to be addressed. And we also recommend, it's not in the bill at the moment, but the issue of the information, the recording of information for the performances of performance, the log sheets issues, we think that they should be incorporated in the bill as well, because payments of remuneration and payment of royalties, they rely on the issues of the log sheets, how to keep information for that. And the alignment of definitions and so on, we've noted them. And the other clauses and sections that needs to be simplified, and we are saying that there will be that alignment. So in a nutshell, Chair, these are the main core issues that we picked up from the submissions, and we thank you for this opportunity.
Hi, thank you very much, DDG, and also sitting next to the DDG, we have Ms. Padiachi. Thank you. Policy. We can address our questions for clarity to both DDG and her colleague, and any substantive points if you wish to make can also be made now. Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, in terms of the performance workers' rights, is the department intending to meet their counterparts in the Department of Labour? Because we know very well that there's one caste which was almost shredded. It had to go off the air because of the dispute between the performers and the person who's in charge of that. Do you intend to see your counterparts in the Department of Labour so that some of these things can be regularized? On the issue of keeping the records share, it's true. You might have a copyright on the issue of a music, of a song in the form of a CD. But once it becomes a DVD, it's something else. The performer is there live, and then it attracts more attention. You know, when you compare the various songs, I'll make an example. The song of Bee Gees, one is in the form of a song, there's nothing. And the one is in the form of a performance, in the form of a DVD. When you look at the hits which are there in the social media, you find that one of a DVD, especially more heavy, more hits, because there are actors there to what it is. Although in the same group, but the amount of time for the hits which they have on the social media is more when it is in the form of a DVD. So I think on that point, regard, the issue of keeping the records is very important. But will that issue of royalties be differentiated between the cities and the DVDs?
Thank you very much, Honourable Khadebe. Anyone else comment? Or Honourable Kachalia, followed by the Honourable Buyani.
Thank you, Chair. I'm looking at the conclusions page, and it simply says that there are legal and technical issues to be addressed. I understand that, but I look forward to a more detailed response because, this simply says that some proposed changes in the submissions need to be addressed. Yeah, I mean, we know that some proposed changes need to be addressed. Question is, what needs to be addressed? There's certain one or two that have been highlighted here, but a couple have been skipped over in terms of the conclusions that need to be highlighted, in that the minimum contract requirements need to be stipulated and highlighted because that is absolutely crucial as to, secondly, what will be prescribed by the minister, because we can't, that's also absolutely crucial. And then thirdly, in terms of buying into the other, to the other treaties, what are we incorporating selectively? Because treaties are a holistic document. So if you incorporate selectively from it, you don't incorporate the checks and balances of the whole treaty. So we need to understand that. It's an incomplete document, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kachalia. Honourable Buyani.
Thanks, Chair. I think the latter speaker has taken my proposal here. Yeah? But I also think this issue needs the integrated plan, like the Labour Department, also the SAR, and also the Department, so that they know that in terms of the incentive, whatever that they are given. And also a question of the bargaining collective. Can be taken care in terms of the labor issue also. But mine, I'm not so sure in terms of the collecting society. Are we going to have one collecting society per district, or we're going to have collecting society for performers, for actors, for crew behind the scene and so forth, or we're taking one holistic collecting society?
Thank you very much, Honorable Buyani. Honourable Flanguini, followed by the Honourable Tierko.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is just to join into the one of the Department of Labour. Because
you know, what we heard from our performers was horrific, how they are getting treated by the industry, you know, and if we're not going to look into it in depth, we'll have a situation by the end of the day that is much more severe. Because we can't have an industry that is law to itself. It does whatever it wants to do to our performers, and they should do just as they please. So I think the department has to tell us what is the way forward with the Department of Labor, so that we don't just give it a blanket approach, and then when we go to the Department of Labor, then they will say, no, but that was trade and industry's responsibility, so that we can have an idea there. Chair, on the collection society, I remember we asked as well some research to be done as to how other collection societies are working in other countries and stuff like that. Can we just note if that research are done so that we can know and make a responsible decision as to what is going to happen and be effective in our bill? Thank you.
Very much, Honourable Sanguini. I hope everyone's taking note of that point. Honourable Tierko.
Thanks, Chair. Just a comment on the issue of alignment of the two bills. I think it's necessary so that there is no confusion. I hear there are sections that are stated to say that in the CAP, maybe they can cause confusion. They're not yet on the bill, so we need to also to take into consideration when aligning the two bills. Yes. And on top of that, the issue of log sheet, they speak about the nightmare. I think is the administrative part of it, to say how the proposal by the department, when it says that the committee should, I think it's page 15, the proposal to split nearly term 50-50 can be proposed to the committee. So I think that one also the committee we need to take into consideration on how do we consider this proposal from the DTI. And lastly, Chair, I think Honourable Tanguini was speaking about the collective society. We need also to finalise on that matter, Chair. We haven't taken a decision as far as I remember, but also we need to make sure that we take a decision that will cover and make sure we are not saying everybody will be happy, but we need to address critical problems that have been identified during the hearing. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable Tierko, was there anyone else that perhaps I overlooked? No. Members, just also, I know that the earlier comment by the DDG was heard, but just to reiterate it, there is a huge summary of the actual submission, which is bigger than the PowerPoint. But on top of that, we actually have the full submission as well, if I may put it that way. So although this becomes the summary and it's larger than the PowerPoint, we also have the submission. So I think when we're looking at this, it may be pertinent outside of the meeting for us to also appraise ourselves of this, but also for those responding to us now to indicate where we may find some of this information. It's fleshed out in X or whatever. So we're going to move across to yourself now, DDG, as well as the chief director, and all of these names now. Yes, the deputy director. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chair. And thank you for the questions, honorable members. Then I'll start with the Honourable Hadeve's question around, are we intending to meet with the Department of Labour? And I would say that we need to engage with the Department of Labour. the mechanism of how we do it, it's something else, because now the bill is in Parliament. So meaning whatever we do, we will do it in the confines of the guidance we receive from the committee. So we cannot now move as a department, meeting them individually, because we are now in this, we are under the authority of Parliament. So meaning that maybe there might be a need for them to come, like the way Treasury used to come for the other, let's say, credit, to engage and to guide. So maybe that might be the approach. So, but that's something that the committee can look at, but there is a need for that engagement. And in terms of the records, yes, we do need to, that must be emphasized and it must be prioritized. We need to look at, we think that it's important that the logsheet issue is catered for. And it is true that after the performer has done that performance and there's a CD or there's a DVD, there's a long life of that DVD that continues, and it continues to attract investment. It continues to make more income, and why shouldn't the performer still benefit from that? So it is a principle that we support, and I think it's not only in South Africa. We've seen that in other countries they've adopted a similar approach to say performers, even if you did your performance, there should be that continuous string of compensation around what you have done. And in terms of the substance of the presentation, Honourable Kachalia, as Chair has indicated, there is that big document that we have prepared. But not only that, we work as a team with the colleagues in Parliament. And what I tried to avoid was to have a presentation that is a repetition, too much repetition of what advocate might present from a legal point of view. And we thought that what should be emphasized more than our views on what other substances in the bill should be more on the public is saying. We wanted to just give that more emphasis, what the submissions were saying, more than focusing on the clauses to say this must be removed, this must be done. We thought that should come in very strongly. So I think we have done our part in that sense to try to address, and we created that slide as a link to say that there are those issues just for us, because they are going to form part of the deliberations going forward. And I think also, Honourable Mbuyani, the part about the integrated approach with the SARS, because there were issues of text that were mentioned that performers are taxed quite a lot. So maybe SARS is another institution that we need to, maybe the committee can consider bringing on board. And so that should also come in. And maybe the unions, because there is a lot of issues that came up about the bargaining council, the need for the unions to come on board. So maybe we need to look at bringing them on board to say how can they organize themselves for the interests of the performance, because I think that there's a vacuum there, and it may be a vacuum that is not a DTI vacuum, but something that needs the Labour Relations Act. So it's another stakeholder that we need to bring on board to think about them as an option. And Honourable Mbuyane, there is a need for a collecting society for the performers, for actors, and we think that they also are looking forward to that, and it's something that CIPC is also looking into in terms of how best this collecting society can be more mobilized, but there is a need for it. And Honourable Sanguini, the research on the collecting society for actors, I think that as Honourable Teko was saying, there were different information we provided with CRPC to the committee, but on the copyright amendment bill, but there is a need really to look into the collecting society for actors and to do some research. So it's something that we can take on as well as going forward, so that we come up with something that is of quality and that's going to help with further decision making for the process. And I will request my colleague and Honourable Teko, the alignment is something that we've noted, and I'm hoping that advocate will also speak to that between the different legislation, the alignment that is needed from the legislative point, drafting point of view. I'll request Ms. Barayachi to just come in to those on some of the issues.
Thank you, DDG. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity. I just would like to come in on a few
areas, but just from a more technical point of view, so you can get a picture in your head, and that we can create a difference between how the music and the sound recording works vis-a-vis the audiovisual performance for the actor. So, Honorable Khadebe, you're quite correct. DVDs do get a lot of money, but now we need to look at the musician as the performer as well as the actor. So in terms of the Beijing Treaty of Audiovisual Performances, and this is where fixation comes in, if you go to the stage or a theatre show, there's a live performance taking place. So Beijing doesn't really cover that, but the minute that is fixated into a DVD, like Cats, for example, the production, that has an income stream. Same with streaming now. As we all know, DSTV doesn't only have a platform for series, etc. They also have Showmax, Netflix, all those sort of revenues. We need to cater for the actor. Same for the musician in terms of music videos. So there also the DVD will come into play, but it's two different rights. They come from two different treaties. One is the WIPO Performance and Phonogram, and the other one is the Beijing. But you can see them as sort of sisters. The one is the musician, the one is the actor. So as we take the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, always have those two performers in your head, actor, musician, and then so we can treat them differently, not a one-size-fits-all approach. When it comes to the collecting societies, we have to have that same mindset in play now, because we know under the Copyright Amendment Bill we have the collecting societies that we want to bring under the regulation of SIPSI, which is SAMRO, SAMPRA, all of those. Now we don't have one for actors, and they only have two rights at the moment, which is the repeat fees, what is known in industry, and commercial exploitation. So the repeat fees leads to the generations issue, and what was one of the policy positions we looked at when the generations saga hit. Every time that show repeats, whether it's on Encore, on ETV, on SABC, you know how generations was on at 10 in the morning, 8 in the evening, those are a lot of repeat fees with the same performance. And that work does not come into being without that performance. There would be no show without the actor or the actress. Now the second right that they have, which is also not being paid for, is called commercial exploitation. So that is when the SABC or Mnet sells the TV program to another jurisdiction, which will then be played in that country, for example Brazil, and a lot of money is being exchanged. So they are allowed those rights in terms of the contract. They're not receiving them. The other situation is no one is collecting for the repeat fees. There's one individual who has an arrangement with SABC, but it doesn't cover for the majority of our performers in South Africa. It's collecting for maybe 30 people, and that's what we need to change. So we've already started engagement with the World Intellectual Property Organization. We were there on how to set up this collecting society. We've had buy-in from all the actors. In the document that you have, we met them on the 24th of July. They gave us a mandate that they want a collecting society for performance protection for actors. It will, this is why we have to think of the rights now, because they won't have many rights. So it will be one collecting society, maybe only for the right of fixation or making available from the treaty. The other streams will have to be via a contract. So we need to take the right that's the hardest to manage, because they can't as an individual run around and do the licensing and the admin, that the collecting society can collect and then pay for them. Another collecting society that you have to think of, but it is in the other bowl, is the one for the resale rights, the artistic works. So we just need to, you know, put these in our mind in a streamlined fashion. So I just want to quickly also just touch on this document that we have to respond to Honorable Kachalia. What I did in the first page, we've just taken the issues and the summary of what the bill is and what the treaties want to do. We are looking at both treaties holistically, from a definition point of view, from the economic rights perspective, as well as the moral rights. And we've done it specific per performer. So the musicians are catered for in their stream, as well as the audiovisual performer. We've also, on page 2, we've described what the moral right is. We've also listed the economic rights. And then from page 3, we've just indicated how we heavily consulted with industry from a very large period. But the issues, from page 5, and our DDG touched on it in the presentation, we listed the core issues, if you'll see, from page 5 to 6. Should you want us to do a more detailed response, it is in the document, but those are all the issues coming from the public submissions as well as the public hearings. And I think that's all the clarity I have for at the moment. Thank you, and thank you, DDG.
Thank you very much, yes, Ms. Padiachi. Yeah. We're back to yourself then, DDG, because I thought you'd responded to most.
We have responded, Chair, so we are done for this round.
All right, let's just check with members. They've had the initial responses here, given that we're still going to engage. I see members' hands are down. Yes, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, let us formalise the issue of Department of Labour, SARS and the UNICEF. We must invite them as part of the rollout of the programme. Thank you.
Yes, we were just saying here at the table, you know, given when we're going to be dealing with this, there is a need for us to factor that in. I'm sure, Mr. Medema, you took that into account in the same manner that we always invite DAC. We need to invite these others specifically to address that issue. Yes, DDG?
Oh, yes, to add to Honourable Han Adebe, we were just saying that the Department of Communications must also come on board for the broadcasters.
No, we need to really be economic with our time, so it's going to take a little bit of working out by the staff as to when something will be before the committee, so we don't find people here unnecessarily having come all the way from Johannesburg, or Pretoria rather, okay. So we will take that into account, and just while I remember, I think Honourable Khadebe, we're going to have to work on a refinement of the program, and I'm not sure just when Mr. Hermans is not here. I know he's got some part of the day as leave. Okay, he will be here before he leaves, and there will be a need for us to go through the program together before we issue the fine-tuned one. Thank you very much. All right. I must thank the department and yes, Honourable DDG.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to acknowledge my colleague from the DAC. I said I wanted to acknowledge my colleague from the Department of Arts and Culture.
Yeah. I saw the Department of Arts and Culture walking in here, and we had already acknowledged you, but it was just shortly before you had arrived, so you would obviously not have heard us there. But I think it is the deputy director, is it? Is that right?
Is it? Correct.
Yes, thank you very much. Ms. Isizeka Mabunda. Right, thank you very, very much. We also have a few others here as well. And we do appreciate your attendance, and I know they are struggling to address the central air conditioning system, which has still not been addressed. They are struggling, and is it yourself, Yvonne, you were saying that they're trying to address this? Yes. Because we need to get another room if this is going to be the case on a regular basis. But now what we're going to do, it's just 11:45, and we're going to be taking account of the Advocate van der Merwe's input on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill. We've done this before. So she will be addressing the legal aspects, keeping in mind the DDG came from the department. Right. Now, Advocate van der Merwe represents us directly, and we need to accept, you know, have a clear understanding who's who here. Right, Advocate, you're very welcome, and we are aware that all of you have been under the whip, working after hours, weekends, etc. But thank you if you can assist us now. And yeah, I see everyone now beginning to settle down. Right. Okay, fine.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, members.
my presentation, I was being very lawyery about it, and I kind of indicated clearly what I'm going to deal with, because when I worked through the submissions received, or rather the summaries of these submissions received, a number of the concerns raised dealt with the implementation aspect, with the policy behind. Why are we doing this? Why are we not doing that? And if I put all of that in a presentation, it was really just going to be slide upon slide upon slide upon slide of questions that the department had to answer. So as my colleague was saying from the DTI, was saying when they were presenting, we have spoken before this presentation, and I've indicated to them that the policy questions the department will have to come and answer. Some of them I have pulled in because I am a bit concerned about the way something is worded. So there are some questions, but I try to focus on the legal and the drafting concerns. The first issue that I want to speak to on slide 2 is about the fact that South Africa is not yet a signatory to the Beijing Treaty. There were mentions that we had to take into account section 231 of the Constitution, etc., etc. Now, first off, a treaty is a couple of countries that come together, and I think we all know this, but I'm trying to make a point about this. A couple of countries who come together and who talk about their experiences, they share, and they come up with something that can work for every country. So in that sense, we can almost call it the best practice at the time in respect of how all the countries will be working together.
Yes.
Now, even if a treaty is not adopted, so in other words, the treaty is not even signed, it's not even adopted, it's not finished, it's still being drafted, there's still workshops to be held. Nothing stops a country from starting to follow what is being developed in that treaty. That is, in fact, what we did on the IP Laws Amendment Act. Because I might be wrong, but as far as I'm aware, that whole treaty that's being developed there is still in the process of being developed. And by at the time that we were doing the bill on the IP Laws Amendment, we were aware that there's still developments. There were questions that the committee had, and we had those questions because the international community still had those questions. But nothing stops a country from starting to get your house in order, if I can call it that. Section 231 deals with the process to ratify international agreements, your treaties, and say for distinguishing between agreements that only become law once you have it in legislation versus those that have self-executing provisions. So in other words, the moment the minister signs, if it has to be ratified by Parliament, and it is ratified by Parliament, it is automatically there. So, for instance, there would be in international cooperation on crime. Those kind of things would almost be self-executing. But when you talk about how to, this for instance, your performers, that will need legislation to set out because your treaties will only go so far. So the criticism from the public in that regard, I am of the view, is not valid. This committee can proceed even though South Africa has not yet signed the treaty. The public also raised a comment that the long title does not have all the clauses. And you will see that my slides, I titled them CLSO inputs, that's my inputs, and public inputs. And both the public mentioned it, and I also, when I checked the bill, was concerned that not all the clauses are in the long title. It is not the most difficult thing to do, and what I have done from my side is I have drafted a can I call it a mock A-list, in other words, all the things that will have to be changed on a drafting side. So it's not difficult to be done, and it will be a quick exercise because the exercise has in fact been done already. On clause 1, so in other words, we are now looking at the clause dealing with all the definitions. First off, we need to take the IP Laws Amendment Act into account. We've said that in the Copyright Amendment Bill, so it's not news to the members. This will require a couple of changes. So the heading of Clause 1 will change, how the definitions are placed will change, and then the definition of performer is already in the IP Laws Amendment Act. And as far, even as the department in their presentation acknowledged that we will probably need a transitional provision as we've made provision for in the Copyright Amendment Bill. So right at the end to say, until the IP Laws Amendment Act comes into operation, the following definitions will apply. So that we will definitely do, and we'll have to do that in respect of performer. The other issue that came out in performer, it's not on my slide, but I maybe want to just mention it here, is the concern about performer being broad and that it could be interpreted as including an extra or background crew or things like that. If the committee is concerned about that, then we might have to amend the definition of performer as it currently stands in the IP Laws Amendment Act. And that will simply be done by an amendment to Clause 1. So we will change the definition of performer, and we can include it here. There's two definitions, communication to the public of a performance and communication to the public of a phonogram. Now, the phrase as it is defined does not appear in the bill at all or in the Act. So either we need to remove them or we need to define communication to the public, because that phrase does appear in the bill. So it is... I think it might be good to have a definition for communication to the public, because there is a number of technical issues in the bill set out in these definitions. It's just that we can't define the longer phrase. We'll have to define a shorter phrase and then differentiate in respect of performance and in respect of phonogram. The definition of reproduction refers to the Copyright Act, and the concern that I have here is that when you look at the Copyright Act, it deals separately with literary, musical, and artistic works. Now, what we are dealing with, and the public also raised this concern, so it is a bit of a difficult read. When you simply go to the Copyright Act to look at reproduction, you're not sure what you must read. Does it fit in? So the proposal that I would make is that we rather pull the definition into this bill and just give the definition here. It is applicable here. And we just set it out in this Act. If we, however, retain the reference to the Copyright Act, we must just correct the reference to it, because Copyright Act is defined in IP Laws Amendment Act. So the Performance Protection Act now defines Copyright Act. We don't have to give the full title of it. The definition of the tribunal, this is one of the alignment issues. So we have changed the name of the tribunal, and we need to now align it with the copyright bill, which I don't really like saying, but we understand that these two bills do work very closely together. Because the one is a bill, I would recommend that we just refer to the section in the Act, Copyright Act, that deals with that. It's much clearer, it's much surer. If anything happens to the Copyright Amendment Bill, we will not have a problem with the definition of tribunal. We also, in respect of just, as I was saying, the Copyright Act definition itself to be part of the transitional provisions. So I think there will be a number of definitions that we'll just repeat, that I would recommend we repeat in a transitional provision. Now, from the public, and you will know there's a lot of blue on slide 5, where I'm saying the department will have to help, the department will have to tell us what to do. And some of these questions they've already answered, in fact, in their own slides. But things from the public that came out was, whether there's a difference between fixation and audiovisual fixation. And if I understand the department correct, no, there is no definition, no difference between the two. But if there's no difference, we must maybe just look at our alignment of words as well, so that if we use them consistently. Looking at how the definition of audiovisual fixation impact on cinematograph films. And then also, when we look at the Copyright Amendment Bill, what we've done there is we've changed the word audiovisual we've changed the word cinematograph film to audiovisual work. And I'm just wondering if we shouldn't do that in this bill as well, so that you have consistency between the two acts in the end. The department mentioned the concern about broadcasting versus broadcast, and it is something that we just need to look at, so that we don't have some conflict with the Copyright Act itself. On communication to the public, there was also a question, is there any difference between your phonogram and your audiovisual? So I think, the whole copyright performance protection interplay is so complex that I think if we need to make something clear, I think we need to do it. you know, we should not just, no, we think it is fine, people will know what we are saying. I think our bill really needs to make sure that things are clear for people. There was a comment about a comma that is missing. The department can just confirm if a comma is necessary or not, because the one would comply with Beijing and the other would not. It's a big difference that a comma can make sometimes. Like I said here, the definition of performer including extras, and we can maybe attend to that here. There were also proposals for the inclusion of a definition of performance. That is also inserted by IP Laws Amendment Act, and we could put that in the transitional provisions. Reproduction, the public was concerned that it creates confusion between fixation, your first recording, and reproduction, the subsequent copies of fixed performance. And again, like I was saying before, with your audiovisual and phonogram, if there's two things that apply, I think our bill must be very clear about which is which. And we need to just maybe relook at that definition. Then there was also a concern about the definition of phonogram being very similar to that of sound recording in the Copyright Act, which could then cause a conflict between sections in our bill and Section 9 in the Copyright Act. So it is something that we need to look at. Again, phonogram, is it something separate? Is it a sound recording? What do we want it to be? So I think those are things that we really need to hash out. And, you know, definitions, unfortunately, normally takes the longest in any bill. But they are the crux. If your definition is not right, the rest of your bill doesn't mean what it should mean. On Clause 2, I don't want to spend too much time on this specific slide of mine because I'm asking technical questions. You know, in Section 3.2, they refer to those rights, and I'm asking, well, which rights are these? Let's make it clear, you know. This one is actually quite important. Section 3, subsection 3, reads, until the expiry of other rights granted in terms of the section, but when you read the whole section, there's no rights, there's nothing, no expiry period granted in terms of that section. So we need to make it very clear and find out what is the expiry period and make sure that it is inserted. This was also mentioned by the public. Section 3.4, just to word it correctly, if the bill uses the word shall, it's not really acceptable anymore. But if the Act uses shall, then we continue to use shall. Yeah. But we could change it to the present tense. And then using the word there in reference to the performer, as it is not aligned to the introductory sentence, to rather say his or her. So it's just mainly more technical issues. In respect of public inputs on Clause 2, I think the DGI, in fact, addressed this one already, so I won't spend much time on it. It was about the fact that we maybe need to change the word after with notwithstanding, so that you don't only have moral rights after the transfer. Then on the next slide, slide 8, now we're at Clause 3 and Section 3A. First off, Section A, as it starts, it's very long. And in fact, it has two sentences. And because it is such a long sentence, you end up with questions like, first off, it talks about a written agreement, but nowhere does the Act require that there must be a written agreement. So, you know, we must first say there must be a written agreement. Then the question is, what is transferred? Is something automatic? Is there? Do you need to first give permission? And then also the clause itself talks about transfer and rights that can accrue by both parties, but your heading only talks about transfer. So we need to make sure our heading is also correct there. And my recommendation would be that Section 3A is re-looked at and that we put it into sub-paragraphs, just so it is a little bit more cleaner and it is clear what is going on. And then we can also fill in the gaps. So in other words, first start with that you must enter into a written agreement and then go from there. Other concerns that I think the department, in fact, also already addressed this, is what must be prescribed. And the department has indicated it must be the minimum content of the contract that must be prescribed. So we must just make that clear. In line 21 of Section 3A, it uses the word performance, but the whole section deals with a fixed performance. So we need to make sure that, are we talking about a performance? Are we talking about a fixed performance? And just make sure that our wording is correct. And then just things like contractual agreement, rather just say agreement, because it's the same word that we're repeating. And then the last thing, so if we break this section up into small bits, we'll start with the requirement of a written agreement. We'll set out what the written agreement requires, how the transfer happens. And then we can end, because that is also a gap, with what happens if there is no written agreement. In copyright, we actually have that your assignment has no force or effect unless it is in writing. So there is a consequence for not having it in writing. From the public, the department already discussed this, what happens after the 25 years. It's clear that it reverts and it can be renegotiated. So we need to just make that clear. The one legal concern that came up here was the concerns of contractual freedom and the fact that if you now say it reverts after 25 years, the fact that you're interfering with persons' rights of contractual freedom. I'm saying here in short that we've discussed this at length under the Copyright Amendment Bill and the same principles apply here. So in other words, principles of, yes, you have a right to the freedom of, you have a right to trade, but that trade can be regulated. So the principle that we've applied here is the same as in copyright. Then clause, still on clause 3, but now section 3B. The first bullet here on slide 10, the department actually already addressed, where although we're talking about a producer, our section talks about copyright owner, and the DTI has indicated that should change to producer, so it is quite clear what we are talking about here. Then also the second bullet was dealt with by them, the fact that the minister approves remuneration, and my question was, no, must he approve every agreement? Because then I think we're going to have a problem if the minister must approve every agreement. I can't see the minister having that time. So it is something that we just need to look at, how the minister must do this and exactly what it is that the minister must approve. And then also just the use of shall. There weren't real, from the public, the inputs on 3B were mostly policy, so I've left that for the department to deal with. The next slide, slide 11, deals with clause 4. And again, there's a number of drafting errors, words underlined that already appears in the text of the Principal Act. Those are just technical issues that have to be done. Replacing an and with an or otherwise the performer must always have both an original and a copy available, which does not make sense. So we need to just make that sense. And then we have something to draft this. It's a bit of a joke because we call it dangling modifiers, and you can have very absurd situations. So we bring a little of lightness into our work with it. And the way line 15 there on page 5 is worded, we could interpret it that the performer would be sold. And I think we need to just correct that, because it's surely the performance that we are talking about and not the performer itself. We're not dealing in human trafficking here. So just a tiny technical thing. Then we're talking about rental rights, and the department in their thick document also talks about the different rights, and one of them is the rental right. And I think it might just be, again, a drafting error, because we are allowing an original performance to be rented out, not the original fixation. So it just feels a bit like a technical error in my head. Then also, again, underlined words, talking about fair and equitable remuneration, but the phrase, the actual paragraph that it refers to does not include it. So you must just make sure that our cross-referencing in the bill, in fact, speaks to each other. Then the rest is the same, where we are selling the performer, just correct that. Then the subsections 1A to 1D, and the department has spoken about this. This is the long process that we also had in the copyright, where you must notify the performer, and if you didn't notify him, you must do this. And lots of criticism came out against that in Copyright Amendment Bill, and also here the public criticized it. But already the department has proposed an answer, and I know in Copyright Amendment Bill that was acceptable by us. In fact, the committee deemed it as very important that we bring the lock sheets principle in here. So I think that has already been fixed to some extent. We just need to now execute that. So on slide 12, again, just a couple of technical issues. Is a sentence changed to the negative, so we should change the word and to nor.
The word is missing. And then the section, the clause that we're dealing with, talks about an original performance, but that word, is that phrase, original performance, is not used in the Act or anywhere else. So we need to maybe see, do we need to define this, or do we maybe describe it just a bit better where it is in here? And then the subsection 1A, we're talking about almost as if there's more than one type of fixation possible. And again, it's those things, we might have one or two aspects, and I think we need to just be very clear on our bill, which are we talking about. If there's more than one, to make it clear that there's more than one, and these are the things that we refer to. On Clause 5, just first of the issue of IP Laws Amendment Act, I will not say too much on it, we'll need transitional provisions to just make sure that things are in fact working out very well. From the public, there was a concern about the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. I've looked at this and I don't see a concern for this bill or for the Performance Act in general, because the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act is limited to electronic transactions and in any event operates subject to other legislation. So in other words, it will apply to electronic transactions unless our Act make some other provision, then our Act will trump. So there we are fine. There was also a mention made of the Cyber Crimes and Cyber Security Bill before the Department, before the Portfolio Committee on Justice. Now, what I've spoken to the support staff from the Portfolio Committee on Justice, initially the bill was going to be sent back to the Department as a whole. It seems that at this point in time, the committee is looking at splitting the bill so that they only deal with cyber crimes. So part of that bill might still proceed. But now, for this committee to wait or delete things because it's a cyber crimes bill before the Portfolio Committee of Justice is, in my view, it will be wasted time. We just cannot. So what we will do from our side as support staff to the committee is to let the support staff from Justice know that they should keep our bill in mind when they do their bill. Because we're first. You know, we are first. They haven't even started yet. They need to, if it's necessary to repeal sections that our bill introduces, then they must do it in their bill. But we can't just accept, or they need to say that their bill will trump or whatever. They need to make something in their bill. It cannot be our problem. Okay. Then Clause 6, again, the issue of IP Laws Amendment Act. Here is the concern about the Copyright Act, and it is Clause 6 that made this bill be delayed as much as it has been, because it was Clause 6 that required us to first deal with the Copyright Amendment Bill before we could get to this, because Sections 28O, P, Q, and R are being inserted into the Copyright Act by a bill. Now, this bill has not even really been adopted by this committee yet. We hope it will be done soon. But then it must go to the NCOP, where the Select Committee can reject it. It's possible. Then it must go to the Presidency, if it is passed by the NCOP, where the President can send it back to Parliament and say, I'm concerned about it. So there are so many hurdles, and that's why we don't ideally want to refer to a bill. Now, because copyright is as far as it is, politically, it can be managed to refer to the bill in this bill and to just make sure that this Clause 6 cannot become operational before the Copyright Amendment Bill is in fact operational as an act. The other options that we can do is to actually take Sections 28, O, P, Q, and R from the Copyright Amendment Bill, extract them there, retain them in copyright for copyright, but also include them in this bill. So that's one option. Another option is that we can put something in the transitional provisions to say that this cannot become operational until that amendment bill has become operational. So there are some things that we can do, a little bit of technical things behind the scenes, so to speak, that we can do just to safeguard. But the main thing is that the Copyright Amendment Bill will have to be enacted and operational before this clause can become operational. Then there was also a concern about the conviction and certain offences and things. But the penalties that our bill refers to does not, the sections that our bill refers to that deals with penalties, those sections are specific to three offences in the Act. In other words, our offence that our bill creates does not have a penalty, and we will have to add a penalty. So that is just something, shouldn't be too much, but we will have to do that. Like I said, someone from the public was saying, just insert 28OBQ&R right into this Act, and you know, don't have any other problems with that. Chair, thank you. Those are the inputs that I have to make.
Thank you very much, Advocate van der Merwe. Can we just see by show of hands the members who wish to engage? Honourable Kierko, Honourable Kichalia. Right.
Thanks, Chair. I think the explanation, as you indicated, to say advocate is representing us, and but here she's giving us option also to say either this or that. So I think that's where we come in to assist, to say if she's saying on that, I think I'll concentrate on the last bulletin, but it will overall talk to other clauses, number 14, slide 14. When you say the section and the OPR, what, if we separate them, we deal with them separately, we insert them also on this one. Is there any harm, or it would be good for the both bills to go separately? Because we have also explained that it might be rejected on NCOP and that process, and then if we do that and the transitional provision, then it means this one cannot be operational if that one is rejected. So if we do it separately, I think that's where I say I can propose that we can do it separately and insert it individually. I don't know, Chair.
Yeah. So there's a proposal there from Honourable Tierko for us to consider. Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify what I said in terms of not being a signature to the Beijing Treaty. In view of the advocate's response, I fully understand that we can incorporate clauses as we go along. However, what I'm saying is that we need to guard against selectivity, because it needs to be in line with the overall intent and detail of the treaty. Otherwise, there'll be a discordance down the line. Now, that may well be so, but we need, in terms of oversight, to have sight or assurance that this is not the case, so that, you know, we've done our job. Thanks.
We've got two very good points that have been made here, and I think are very relevant and pertinent as we proceed in this direction. I also want to continue with a point made by the Honourable Tierko when we were alerted by the advocate to a very long sentence. I think most of us would know that sentence was in a little bit of your notebook. It would have been the entire page. We're looking at 3A. I think it's the transfer of rights. And yes, you can get totally lost as to what's happening. And while I was having a look at it and just thinking that would be in terms of slide, I think it is 8, is it?
Yes.
That one could consider where you could maybe draw a line under 1, 2, 3, 4, where it says where the performer has consented to fixation, etc., etc., shall be owned or exercised by or transferred to the copyright owner of such audiovisual fixation or his or her licensee. One could consider a full stop and then again say this will be subject to a prescribed written contractual agreement with the performer, which shall give the performer the right to receive royalties or a fair, equitable remuneration, whichever is applicable for any use of the performance. Full stop. This would be provided that such an agreement. So you've got three sentences, basically. You've broken it up. And if we could get that taken into account by DTI, who has crafted this legislation, working with perhaps the advocate purely for the legal crafting, we could consider breaking it up in that manner, and you'll still have the substance, but we'd understand it. All right. So there again, we had that option. There were a few other things which were referred to as technical things like commas or something being underlined. I do think the DTI will be taking care of that directly, working with our own advocate. There were other areas, though, where I think it is slide 5, where there was a point about the definition of reproduction creates confusion between fixation, etc., and that. Now, we need to correct that definition. Now, I wouldn't like to propose anything there, but to ask the DTI to go ahead and correct it for us. The same applied to some of those, commas, this, that, and the next thing. Here, we were asked by our advocate on slide 6 that it wasn't clear when this expiry date would be. Do you remember that? And I just think that, again, it's up to the department and our advocate to just tighten that up and make sure that we do have an understanding as to where this is. All right? And I think, you know, this liberal use of there rather than reference to performers not aligned with introductory sentences. Let's just get everything in alignment, you know, and those are simple points there. It is true, and I think there's one thing I would like to raise with committee. There are certain things where we've dealt 2 or 3 hours on a phrase under copyright. Issues such as contractual freedom. What do we mean by that? You know, now, we don't need to go back again and regurgitate all of that. I think we ought to look at the notes we've made and move on from that particular point there. The other one here then, there was a reference to quite a bit of policy, but there was something here on page 10 which put something to the committee. Now, surely this is not what we want, the minister now having to apply and approve each and every little agreement. This is not what we want, is it? So we certainly want that rationalised and to reflect our intention there, all right? And certainly clean up the shall and the should on, you know, put the right one in there. On page 11, or slide 11, there's a reference to incorrect underlined words, etc., etc. But you mentioned that this phrase, under subsection 4A, when speaking of fair and equitable remuneration, it didn't include the phrase. And this is something that was raised by the public. And, you know, when it says raised by the public, it means it's pretty obvious, you know, and we do need to clean that one up. Very, very quickly. I must say, I didn't quite understand what you were referring to, Advocate, when you spoke about, well, it's similar to dangling modifier. I don't even know what's dangling and what isn't. But earlier on, you know, I see earlier on the page, it's talking about the wording, line 15, of a dangling modifier, and is this... I've never heard of a performer being a dangling modifier. I mean, what are we talking about here? Does anyone know? Hmm. You know, Honourable Tierko? No? Can, I mean, it's... Yeah, no. Can you just clarify that, please? I mean, I don't know what you're talking about.
Thank you, Jim. I think I need to actually take members to the exact... So we're on page 5 of the bill. Line 25. So, so I just want to make sure I am at the right one. No, that's not 25. Sorry, it's line 15. So, when we read
That subparagraph 4 on page 5, it starts in line 13. It says, without the consent of the performer, make available to the public the original performance and copies of that performance fixed in an audiovisual fixation through sale of or otherwise of such a performer. Now, of such a performer is then what we call a dangling modifier, because it is a modifier. It speaks to the audiovisual fixation of the performer. So in other words, when you look at the audiovisual fixation, it's not just by itself. It is someone's audiovisual fixation. So it's, there is a modifier, the performer's. It's the performer's audiovisual. So that's why the modifier comes in. Why it is dangling is it is now being put in another place in the sentence so that we look at the sale or otherwise of such a performer. So in other words, what we are saying is that when we are making available these original performances, we sell the performer, and that is how we make it available to the public. And that is not the intention. That is exactly the point. So the sentence should read, make available to the public the original performance of such a performer or copies thereof of that performance fixed in an audiovisual fixation through sale or otherwise. So in other words, what I'm just saying is of the performer is a modifier, and it is in the wrong place in the sentence. You can interpret it as modifying one or two things, and it should only modify one thing, and that is why it needs to be corrected. Chair, while I have the microphone, if I can just maybe speak to what Honourable Tieko has said about the concern about whether transitional provision would suffice, whether there would be any detriment if we include the sections in here. No, there will not be any detriment if we include the sections in here. The two acts are administered by the same department. So if the department amends the Copyright Act, they should know that they should also amend the Performance Protection Act. Where it is sometimes a bit of a risk to copy from one act and put it into another act because you want the specific words of that act is, for instance, when it comes to the definition of income tax or connected persons in the Income Tax Act. People in legislation, it often says connected persons as defined by the Income Tax Act. And why they do it in other legislation and not actually repeat the definition is that the Income Tax Act is often amended. So connected person changes so often, and you want it to be the same as the Income Tax Act. So if your legislation then says it does not include a family member, but the Income Tax Act changes that, then your act will not be the same as the Income Tax Act. But these two acts are administered by the same department. So if we do insert it here, it will simply be a repetition. We'll actually simply copy from the Copyright Amendment Bill, pop them in here. And in fact, I might be speaking out of turn, but I'm actually of the view that we would not necessary to actually advertise even that, because we are already referring to it. So it's already in our bill, we're just making it clear. The transitional provision, I agree with you, it is a bit risky as well, because if the other bill is never coming into operation, your transitional provision will force this clause to just never come into operation.
I think, look, that it clarifies things for us, am I right? And lest we all succumb to a lack of oxygen, you know, it has become more pertinent now for us to get our heads into the open air. Really, you know, this is close to historical accounts of being suffocated. Anyway, it just shows what poor old MPs have to put up with, eh? And the department. But look, members, what we're going to do, I understand, perhaps from Yvonne working with Mr. Medema, that we will be able to bring the lunch forward to 12:30. Half past 12 will be fine, yeah. And I think that we need either you, Mr. Hermans, or someone to tell members where that is. The old assembly dining hall. Right. So what we're going to do at this point, it's 12:30. We're going to take lunch between 12:30 and 1:30 and then return here. I must thank you, Advocate, for that succinct
you know, input, as well as the DDG and Ms. Padiachi, and also to thank all the other members of the different entities that are here and members of the department for being here. And you'll be able now to go and open up your lungs, get a bit of fresh air, and return at 1:30 to this venue. Thank you.
Thank you.